Up dog fella, look good, feel good, play good. We got some new Adidas golf swag coming the fella's way.
I don't know if any new golf swag would help your game, but I love it. Adidas is excited to introduce new offerings within the Go-To apparel collection that allows you to bring your style to the golf course. Not the traditional golf uniform, Go-To brings a fresh attitude to the game wherever you play. You'll look good on and off the course while enjoying all the technical benefits that let you play your best.
Featuring streetwear-inspired style, the Go-To collection rewrites all the rules and encourages you to express your style through every swing. Explore the new Go-To collection on adidas.com/golf.
Fellas,
Labatt Blue USA. Lots of things are better together. Hockey and Labatt Blue. Golf and Labatt Blue. Barbecuing with an ice-cold Labatt Blue. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
What's missing curfew? It's when you kind of play guilty, but you show up.
How nice is a green light on the road, though? No practice tomorrow, no plane, just go.
Scotty Upshaw in the clear, and he scores! Right in front, scores!
A few laughs, a little bit of fun, and obviously a lot of hockey talk.
You're listening to Missing Curfew.
The lads.
Up dog, my man, fella Friday.
Fella Fridays love continue. It. And for those of you that are bored with in regular season talk, we're almost
That's
there.
Me. That's me.
That is Obi. That's we're me. Almost there, folks. We've got 2 weeks, 3 weeks and counting. Games are getting better. They're getting tighter. Thank Playoff God. Positions are in place. Thank God. The dog days are over.
I can only watch so much soft regular season hockey, and that's what it is most nights. It's soft. I got to put my goddamn rent up every night just to watch this stuff. No, I'm just joking. But listen, Uppy, you're right. It's playoffs right around the corner. It's a great time of year. And in all seriousness, I am sick of watching regular season hockey.
No, by rights. I mean, there's a lot of time put on the couch, a lot of time leaving the course early to fire on that, you know, that Thursday night TNT or that Tuesday night ESPN or whatever the case may be. I'm sick of going to the ESPN Plus app and just watching regular season games.
Yeah,
and that stupid commercial, that sound, it drives my kids crazy, drives my girl crazy.
They need to fix that.
This game has ended. Yeah. I don't care. Put on a music. Put on some waterfall or something.
They do it during the commercial breaks, too.
Why do they do that?
I have no idea.
ESPN, fix it.
But I will tell you what. We are not the only people sick of regular season hockey. The Columbus Blue Jackets, Ottawa Senators, Montreal Canadiens. I'm not going to throw a pin in there.
The Anaheim Ducks.
San Jose Sharks, Chicago Blackhawks, Anaheim Ducks, and Arizona Coyotes are also sick of regular season hockey.
Well, they're ready to almost get their Adidas tee times here set up they're on the outs.
I've been on the San Jose Sharks team. We were called the Colorado Avalanche, though, and it was the lockout year, and we had like 15 games left, dude. And Sacco hates me. I'm not playing. And Dave Quinn. It was more Dave Quinn. Quinn, who, hey, Dave, you're going through it again in San Jose. Hey, buddy. So maybe it wasn't me. Maybe it was you.
Yeah, he's gone through a couple. He's gone through
Off dog, I'm not playing. I'm getting rinsed. I'm just looking at the schedule going, come on, man.
Just don't get hurt. If I get put in there, don't get hurt. I don't want to fuck up my golf game for the winter or for the summer.
Yeah, and right? you were in the playoffs. Loops was in the playoffs with – that was when they played Boston.
Yeah, so I was in
– Oh, no, that was the year before. The year before they played, the year before we both missed the playoffs, when you were playing the Devils.
Yeah.
We went to Australia. I don't know who the Leafs played the next year, but listen, these guys, point being, they're ready for the summer. They're ready for get me out of there.
Summertime.
Yeah. Well, we got an absolute beauty on Fellow Friday today. A guy that means a lot to both of us, Sheldon Surrey, legend on the ice, legend off the ice. Went through some ups and downs, came out through the other side, up dog. This is a great interview. I always wish I played with this guy. For on the ice, I thought we would have been a good D pair. He plays right side. And then for off the ice, obviously, I would have just been his wingman. But he's a great guy.
He's a great guy. Listen, Northern Alberta guy from Fishing Lake, little community in Alberta. Played the game the right way. Went through, geez, I love the path. AJHL, Fort Saskatchewan Trader.
Yeah.
Right to the Dub. He spent 4 years in the Dub grinding, and then
good Western League.
We do touch on it, but you know he had an injury coming into his draft, so he started with his You know, he didn't start on third base. This guy earned everything he got. Yeah. And tough, handsome. He was highly skilled. He talks about the sauce passes, which is
it's an epic interview.
You know, a guy that I always remember Shelly as a guy like, I didn't want to fuck with him. And
fuck no.
You don't want to fuck with him, although you're like, man, this guy, he gets to sit on the point. He fucking takes one-timers. His living is taking one-timers and then going out after the game and just mixing it.
Yeah, heavy one-timers.
All he knew where they were going, it was high.
He ripped a couple by me when I was in Colorado and he was in Dallas. I had to go to him after about the middle of the second. I said, fella. I go, this is Dallas. I'm going out after. Just keep him just below the eyes. And I, you know, if I get, take him on the shoulder, okay. But just don't hit me anywhere here.
Yeah. I can't wait. One thing I just, as we're talking here, I can't wait for Princey to fire up some fucking good old fashioned
Sheldon Sir.
Like fucking highlights.
Fellas, watch how hard his shot. It's just like it is next level.
Kids out there, when your dad or your buddies tell you to shoot high, shoot hard, watch how Surrey shot
them. I remember I used to look at a stick. I think we played a lockout game with them in El Segundo with Stoli and the boys. I think Shelly played, and I looked at his twig.
Big heel.
And it was like that. I was like,
big old pizza shovel.
Yeah, no wonder he's ripping them past my ears. But before we get to the legend, Sheldon Surrey, DraftKings, baby.
Presented by DraftKings. Stay tuned because you'll hear more about our friends at DraftKings and all we have to offer throughout this show. DraftKings, the crown is yours.
Saturday night, lock of the night. Up dog, my man. Set the tone for the fellas. Who you got? Lock of the night.
I mean, considered that, you know, our friends down here in Newport Beach, Southern California, our old Ducks.
Killer, we'll tee it up soon.
It's not perfect, but they're going to be in the hunt for that first overall pick again. Listen, they're going into Edmonton. Connor, Leon, take it easy on the fellas. But I got the Edmonton Oilers, probably -650. I don't know. It'll be high.
This could be the highest line that I've seen thus far. I believe I took it. Dallas at -501. I might have seen this could be a -600 for the lads.
Yeah.
But hey,
taking it. Grab him a, just grab a sack, boys. Just give him a tug.
That's why we call it the lock of the night, fella. I'm going back to my old stomping grounds, Ball Arena. Listen, I'm taking the Colorado Avalanche over the Nashville Predators. However, I did take the Preds at the start of the year to make the playoffs. They are rolling along. Andrew Brunette, when you bring Ryan O'Reilly into your dressing room, good things happen, people. However, Fact Daddy, it's not going to be good that night. The Avalanche want to set a little precedence that they are still the team to beat in the West. Avalanche at home, McDavid and the Oilers over Killer and the poor Ducks. Killer, we'll take you a Big Canyon soon, eh?
Absolutely. Then hopefully they give Fact Daddy a little video tribute. Well, they're throwing all the
If you're going to
get him a video tribute back in Denver there, the Mile High.
I go on my phone and give him a video tribute of me and him drinking Jameson the whole time we were there. That's what a lot of it came from. But up dog. An absolute beauty coming up right now. Sheldon Surrey coming at you.
Fellas, let's talk about our friends at Lucy. Lucy's made for your nicotine routine and delivered straight to your door with pouches, breakers, or gum. And they often ask, what kind of strength do you prefer? Or what differences have you noticed when you use breakers versus regular nicotine? Well, boys, we all have our different stories. Or when do you happen to throw it in? Is it a midday slump, at the golf course, post-coffee, etc.?
Lucy Breakers, nicotine pouches, but with a tiny capsule inside. The capsule contains liquid flavor that saturates the pouch before it's even in use. Yeah, break it with your teeth, get it situated, and boom, fella. Instant nicotine release when you need it.
Let's level up your nicotine routine with Lucy. Go to lucy.co/curfew and use promo code
curfew
to get 20% off your first order. Lucy offers free shipping and has a 30-day refund policy if you change your mind. That's lucy.co and use code
CURFEW
to get 20% off and always free shipping.
All right, fellas, here comes the fine print. Lucy products are only for adults of legal age and every order is age verified. Warning, this product contains nicotine and nicotine is an addictive chemical. Welcome back to Mr. Curfew, Up Dog by Man. This was a guy that I looked up to a lot when I, you know, before I got in the league, when I played against him, good style on and off the ice, always going no bucket, always had a good tan, good style, 760 games. A guy I know you love too, Sheldon Surrey. Shelly, thank you so much for taking the time, buddy. We're big fans of you and Mr. Curfew here.
Oh, what's up, boys?
I like the backdrop. That's NHL, buddy.
buddy, I rented this place for an hour, so we got to be done.
Airbnb. That doesn't seem like your style at all. You got the olive trees in the back. Hey, you know what's funny? We've brought in a lot of guys who we've wanted to talk to on the show for a while, and you're one of them that stands out to me because you're a guy on the ice. I wanted to stay as far away from you as possible.
Yeah.
But then off the ice, since I've got to know you, I want to hang out
as
with you
close
more.
As you can.
I want to be as close to you as I can. Not many guys I could say that about, Shelly.
I love you guys, man. Known you guys a long time, and those are kind words. You guys know how I feel about you. I've had a lot of fun nights, and I was just saying a little bit before. I'm proud of you guys for doing what you're doing. I mean, this is not an easy space to get into, especially after hockey and all that. So you guys are crushing it, man, and thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no, and let's start right there, Shelly. We'll talk some hockey and the good old glory days that we all had, but how's life for you now, fella? You look great. Yeah, you seem happy from all the stuff I see with you on social media. You're in Las Vegas doing your summit thing, but what's your day-to-day stuff like in Sheldon Surrey's life?
You know, I feel like I've kind of had two major chapters in my life, right? The one where you have a career and that's kind of what we're known as, and that's, you know, given us a little bit of a runway to figure out life after hockey. But I think, you know, my life now is so much bigger than it ever was. Just personally, I think, you know, getting sober for me was a big thing because, as you guys know, when you retire, it's tough, right? I don't care if you have a lot of money or you have no money. When you retire and it's something you've been doing your whole life, you know, a lot of guys, and I know you guys know this, but a lot of guys don't have these educations that you just fall back on and go to being an accountant or a lawyer. So for me, when I retired, there was a few years in there that I just, I was really lost. And from the outside looking in, still having, you know, a little bit of money and being able to do some things that maybe some other people weren't able to do when they retired. I guess it just goes to show that whatever you have on the outside doesn't fulfill you. So to your question, that was a really long-winded thing, but my life is so simple. It's big, you know, getting married a few years ago and then having a baby that's 10 weeks old today. If someone would have told, there was two things that I knew I would bet everything I had on, and that 5 years ago, and that would have been if someone would have said I'm getting married again or having kids again, I would have pushed all my money in the middle and said, there's just no way, you know, there's just no way. But life just keeps surprising me and getting bigger. And Uppy, I know you have with the Discovery Land thing, and that's really fun and has given me a chance to meet some really cool people and opened a lot of doors and learned a lot in those things. I mean, it's even though it's kind of a job, it's absolutely not. But it fills my days at least. And to be able to come home, do like a calm and loving home sounds kind of corny, but for me, it's changed my life.
Hey, Shelly, let me ask you there, because we are lucky, you know, Discovery Land, such a great gig for you, and we're doing our thing here at Missing Curfew, but when you play hockey, you're a hockey player, you just focus on hockey. You get an agent, you get a, you know, you get a accountant and a money guy, and you just focus on hockey. And I talked to Ty Domi during the All-Star game, and Ty said, Obes, I was doing business throughout my playing career. That's what I was already preparing for hockey. Going back, is that something you would have maybe done differently too? It's something that, because we have downtime, right, Shelly? You know, after practice, this and that. Would have you prepared yourself more for life after hockey during your playing days?
Well, there's no question, right? Yeah. But hindsight's 20/20. I mean, I just felt like I had a good career money-wise financially, and I felt like, you know, I was just going to retire, and I would be in retirement mode for the rest of my life. I'd be playing golf and hanging out and just doing whatever the heck I wanted to do. And I didn't even think about the future when I was playing. You know, when you're playing, your days are so busy. I didn't even think about the next day. Sometimes if you look at like a road trip and you're gone for 9 days, like you get overwhelmed, right? So no, I didn't do any sort of forward planning. And that's when I got in trouble. I know you guys know it, you know, when you retire.
Yeah,
and all of a sudden you're known as something, and people know you as what you do, and then all of a sudden it's musical chairs and the music stops and you're standing there going, what the hell happened? Like, now what? And so that was a really tough time for me, and I wasn't expecting that. I thought I would just cruise into retirement and be like, this is amazing. And it was completely opposite.
I'm with you, Shelly. When I first retired, I was single. This guy was still playing. Loops was doing Loops' thing. I was looking forward to garbage day on Wednesday to get out there and put my garbage out and be like, oh, at least, you know. Then I'm like, all right, what am I going to do to go shoot 85 again? So I went through it too, my man. It's really tough. Yep.
Shelly, you mentioned Chapters, and you're in a lovely one right now with Tess and your new little boy, Ollie. Congrats on that. You know, in the middle of those Chapters, you know, the transition stage, is there someone or something that stands out to you that helped you like click, you know, whether it was someone that helped you, you know, find soberness and find happiness there, or was it like the new tribe or team you put together, whether it was at Gauzer Ranch that has this, you know, tight knit community? But how did you find your team after leaving a game that you had a team forever, right? How did you find that new team? And was there someone that stands out to you that really helped you get there?
I certainly didn't. Well, there's two things. I didn't see addiction being a part of my life. I just thought I just didn't think that was going to be me. It was just plain and simple. And I didn't think recovery was going to be a part of my life. If I'm not addicted, why would I get, I like to have a few beers. I like to hang with the boys. And that was like our life for a long time, right? Yeah. I don't know. I just fell into this thing. I started isolating. I started having this attitude of like, I deserve this. Why is everyone on my case? Like, I've earned this. And I think as it got worse, my first rehab was in 2017 in January. My second was in September. So I'm a little bit of a slow learner. You know, I need a little bit of pain to make me feel alive. But I would do it differently for sure. But I think that, you know, I had a group of friends who cared about me. I had a smaller group of friends that really cared about what was happening and were able to talk to me about it and confront me. And I remember every single one of those guys who was in that small group is still in that small group. And I just knew that, like, I couldn't continue living the way I was living. It was just, you know, hey, look, some guys retire and they can have fun and they can go for a weekend or wherever. And you guys go to Aspen and our lives are big and you can control it. And that wasn't me. I just figured I would stop doing pills whenever I wanted. Just need a little more willpower and, you know, all these things that I just didn't even think would ever happen in my life. But, my life today has people who support my recovery. And I know, Uppy, you know, our friend JJ and the whole discovery thing is, these guys really helped me get back on my feet, you know, just, any way they could, supporting me and just talking to me like real talk, right? Like, dude, this is not good. And I lost sight of that. And, you know, my family's, I met Tess, as you know, or Uppy, and my life just started getting bigger. The more simpler it got, the better it got. And I know, Obis, you're probably like me. The coach used to tell me, like, simple, stupid.
Yeah.
And I'm like, no, dude, I know how to saucer the puck. Don't worry, right? And that's just kind of my motto these days. I just keep it simple, and somehow life just keeps showing me things that I never thought were going to happen.
Yeah, Shelly, like, when you talk about that closeness, groups that came to have that conversation, you know, how did you react to that? Because there's certain guys I'm thinking about right now that, you know, maybe I should have had a conversation with, or maybe I still could, or like, how did you take that when JJ or whoever came to you and said, Shelly, fuck, fella, like, were you standoffish, or did it take them to open your eyes and be like, wow, these guys love me kind of thing?
A little bit of both. A little bit of like, fuck, I'm a big boy, I got it.
Yeah.
You know? And a little bit of, I knew the way I was feeling, I didn't like, I just couldn't figure out how I was going to do this. And, I will say at the time that I went to my treatment, those two treatments, the first time, I had been retired for probably 4 or 5 years. And, the hardest thing I ever did was pick up that phone and call the NHL doctors and say, hey guys, you know, I got a problem. And I know everyone probably has their own experience, but there was no questions asked. And for that, I'm grateful, right? And there was no judgment. And my best friends, who are still my best friends, just want to see you get better. And I still see that as you guys do with other guys. Like, I just want to see him do better. I hate seeing people who have so much, but take it for granted. And that was for sure me. Like, that was just, that was me. And so those people who are in my life who supported me will be in my life forever, because it's, I really feel it takes a strong person to come up to you guys or to me and say, bro, you're off the rails. Because when I was playing, everybody was just encouraging what I was doing. There was no, it was like, as long as they were along for the Saturday nights in Montreal or, you know, the weekends in Malibu, right? As long as that was happening, everyone was cool with it. So yeah, I mean, I'm really grateful for the people who are like, you know, smarting up, not knowing how I'd handle it. And hey, let's be honest, I didn't handle it great at the beginning. I'm like, okay, so I'm going to cut that guy out because he's calling me out of my stuff.
Yeah.
So that guy, I'm not going to talk to. Oh, and this guy, oh yeah, like, you know, you see what I did to that guy? Well, don't fucking call me out, because you're going to be sitting in the corner like him. It was just a bad cycle. And, you know, and you guys have been along for it, and you guys have both at different times, you know, been like, hey, way to go, man. And I really appreciate that. Like, people don't understand, I think, sometimes what kindness and some nice words can do for a person. Like, we all put on this persona, like, we're, you know, we got it all handled and I'll take care of it. And sometimes you just need like someone with a, like a soft hand to be, to tell you it's okay, you know?
Yeah. And Shelly, just, you know, when I first retired, I remember one time this guy pulled me aside and was like, you know, you're going pretty hard, Obes, and this and that. And I was going pretty hard. And there was a point where I was like, fuck, Obes. I mean, it's every weekend here, and you're trying to get arguments at the bar, and, you know, you're doing this. And you know, I mean, I'm like, and then, you know, COVID kind of happened. I met somebody in my life, and then this started happening. And I kind of got through it, you know, kind of on my own. But I guess where I'm going with it, when you're a guy like myself who's not perfect, right, who can, you know, have, how do I go to somebody that maybe I love and he's going to be like, well, fuck, Obes, who are you to say it to me?
Yeah.
I saw you 2 weekends ago. You're the fucking drunkest guy in the bar. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, it's hard kind of, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Oh, totally. It's like, hey, don't do what I do. Do what I say.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Don't do what I do. Just do what I say.
Yeah.
And I had a lot of that in my life. And
yeah.
I don't know, man. Like I said, Uppy came up to Gozer and met his, you know, beautiful daughter and his girl, and was encouraging and like, hey, I'm proud of you. And I'm telling you, sometimes you just go home at night and that's all you needed, right? Because we don't know. I mean, we're seeing every day something tragic happen in the hockey world, you know, recent events. We see it happen in the real world. And you just don't know when some person, like, your kindness might save them that day. It just might. Yeah. Like, that's the world I live in, right? Like, with a bunch of other alcoholics and people who struggle. You just never know what a kindness can do. And we've gotten away from that. And sobriety has really brought me back to that. It's like, hey, man, who am I to judge somebody? Like, dude, I had to go to 2 rehabs in 9 months. You know what I mean? And I thought I had it all licked. So it's really taught me to just be accepting and non-judgmental, because you just never know who's going to need a pat on the back.
And Shelly, one guy who I know through your course of seeking sobriety, seeking help, that you got to know is one of my best friends, Jordan Tutu, who I think now has been, he's going on 12 years. And what he's been able to do for guys who have approached him, or through his public speaking that he goes and does, you know, he goes all throughout the northern communities, right? You know, the Nunavut communities, the you know, the native communities throughout northern Alberta, specifically where I'm from, and you know where I'm from. It's a rough place. Fort McMurray is a rough town. I've lost some friends growing up, have some friends with addictions that have lost their families, and it just, it, for me, it goes to show that, you know, it needs to be open door policy. It needs to be something you can go to approach people, whether it's comfortable or not, seeking help, asking questions. And then, like, you know, having guys like yourself and Toots be able to speak up and use a platform like ours, Shelly, to come on and share a story that can touch so many fucking guys, so many people, women, men, because there is help out there, and tragedy sucks, man. And, you know, it affects people, you know, it's got fucking cancer cells that affects everybody. So You know, just for me, I appreciate what Toots has been able to do because he's a better person, a better father, a better friend, and guys like you. It says so much, man. It's awesome.
Well, thank you. You know, I always say this, right? It's like when we played, like, I'm glad we're talking about it. I know it's not normal what you guys talk, and we're going to have fun. I know that you guys are two of the very best, but, you know, I feel like you can talk about mental health a little bit. You know, you remember that like Bell Let's Talk thing. Like, I never paid attention to that because I'm like, fuck, dude, I got my own life going. I don't need to worry about 5 cents for. But we started talking about it. You know, Mike Landsberg started talking about it. And when we were playing, can you imagine if we go to a morning skate and you guys are playing with the Flyers or Obes is with the Canucks and you're playing against the Oilers and you come in the morning for morning skate and the guy says, hey, buddy, how you doing? You go, I'm pretty sad today, man. Yeah. Like, can you imagine Obi doing that? I'm pretty sad. Your teammates would go, what'd you say, dude? Yeah. Well, smarten up, right? And it's just, I think, a little different now where, again, you just don't know who's going to hear this, and it helps. I get messages on my phone pretty much daily about someone who says things. Like, sometimes I feel like a little corny talking about it, right? It's like, man, do people really want to hear about, like, they want to hear the stories from a Saturday night in Montreal, and now I'm talking about, like, sobriety. It's like, sometimes I feel like it's not phony, but sometimes I just feel like that's not what people want to hear. But I'm glad that we are able to talk about it because it's really changed my life. It's not just the just using or drinking either that's changed my life. It's my life has changed.
Yeah.
Right. Just talking about like that with compassion and having like a strong relationship, being able to listen, like all stuff that if you would have told me 5 or 6 years ago, I would have told you guys like, yo, fucking leave me alone. I got other things to do than listen to this. And I'm just really grateful. And again, man, thanks for having me on. You guys have both been supportive of my thing and my sobriety and yeah, Toots. I mean, there's two ways you can go, right? You can be Jordan Tutu or you can be Chris Simon. Yeah. And I know Chris very well. He took me under his wing when I was doing Native hockey schools in Lloydminster in the late 90s. He was my roommate. Always had a tremendous amount of respect for him. And you can, it's okay to struggle, but there's two ways to handle it, right? And I didn't want anyone talking about me, like my kids or my mom in Fishing Lake, you know, having to like talk at my funeral. Like, that's how selfish I was at that point, that people were really worried about that. Like my kids, hey, you know, I take them, when I played in Anaheim, take them to a Ducks morning skate, their classrooms, and oh, your dad's so cool, and oh my God, right? Or my kids going to school and saying, hey, sorry, man, about your dad. Like, that's where I was, you know? Yeah. And I'm really glad that I'm just sitting here right now being able to tell you guys that that's the change I've made in my life, so.
Yeah, and I think, Shelly, from my perspective, as a guy that played the game the right way, like, you were big and you were tough and you were off the ice, you were a legend, and for you to talk about it and be open about it, I think it proves to anybody out there, like, hey, it doesn't matter how big and strong you are and how cool you are. If you're dealing with something and you need help, get the help you're going to get, because you could come out the other side. Because on paper, dude, when I knew you when you were sober, I didn't think you had a problem, dude. I wasn't your best friend, but I would see you. I'd be like, Shelly, I was always happy to see you. I didn't know, right? So it's a good message to be like, hey, maybe on paper everything's good over here, but you can come out on the other side and be like you. So I think it's great you talk about it. Fella, we got to talk about Jägermeister. No chirping, no running its mouth. Let's just talk about the confidence on these guys.
Our friends at Jägermeister sent us this ad read to read on the show, fella. But they're confident that they said, don't do any of that normal ad stuff. Tell the listeners two things. Jägermeister's great, and everyone's been drinking it wrong. Well, if that's the case, how the hell do you think we should be drinking it?
Up, dog, that's a great question. Ice cold, fella, at 0 degrees Fahrenheit to be exact. Ice cold shots of Jägermeister. That's it, my man. That's all they want to tell you. Damn, that's cold.
Just remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Drink responsibly. Jägermeister Liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister U.S., White Plains, New York.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
I love you. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's the same. I love seeing you guys. And you know, there's some people it makes feel uncomfortable, right?
Yeah.
And that's, I'm sorry for that, but this is just the way I live, you know. Yeah, it's just what I'm doing now, and that's just me now.
You're like, I'll put you through a 60-minute fucking gauntlet, though, if you want to size, if you want to still size up.
You're like, let's go, boys. Jim's over here.
Let's get right there. Yeah. How about these, buddy? You should see. So Obi's a swimmer now. Eh? He stays. He's in,
yeah.
He's
changed good my life. Shape, changed my life. Mentally.
Changed his life.
Yep.
And I mean, I love him for it. He's his temperature has come down. I don't know if it's from the pool. This is 75 and cool, but. Getting in a workout with this guy in the summer at Gaza Ranch right now, it's fucking on the driveway, the fucking, you know, you jump squat.
That's a ball ton.
Yeah, it's walking lunges, it's cleans, and I'm like, you could still play.
Shelly, I didn't like that when they were paying me millions in the offseason. Like, I didn't like
Hey, are you still, is that the regimen? Are you still on that?
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, part of my life now, part of my recovery is, you know, there's a physical part to it. Cause I know when I retired, I don't know about you guys, but when I retired, I didn't, my God, like I didn't do anything because I just wanted to disconnect from it all. Right.
Yeah.
And then, I think I was going horseback riding or something with Tess, and, we're in Banff. Right. And, there's a weight limit to ride these horses. Well, I didn't see that. So we pull up around all these
poor fucking horse.
And they go, fuck, hey, bud, go step on that scale there. It's like one of those fucking weigh scales that, you know, the big circle, like at a circus. I said, yeah, no problem. I get on there. The weight limit's 260. I'm 265. Fuck. I go, hey, come on. I'm not going to break that horse. Like, sorry. Ruined her birthday. I couldn't get on a freaking horse. Like, I'll be able to just walk around back. Don't worry, those horses and dangerous anyway.
Hey, Shelly, I feel you, brother. I had to weigh in every day my whole career. So when I retired, I never weighed in ever. And I knew I was putting a few on, right? I had to buy a bigger size. It was getting tighter. Then finally, I was like, fuck, Holmes, you know what? Let's jump on this thing and see where we're at. And I jumped on it. I was fucking 318. And I went, holy fuck. I've got to change my lifestyle. So I'm down to 275 now. I'm down to 275 now. But I was like, I looked at that scale. I go, that can't be fucking right. 318.
Yeah.
Playing the NFL, for fuck's sake. I was like,
buddy, when I got home, I had this little scale, like just a little one, right? And so I'm like, that's a fucking, they're wrong over there. Like, how does that be right? I get home and I step on it. Now I'm like 271. I give it a shake. I think the battery's out. Restart it. I get on. I'm like, fuck.
Yeah.
This is not good, buddy. So that's, you know, fuck, that's where. But, you know, in Gaza, we have such a great group of guys, right?
I love that place, man.
So we just have, like, it's just such a nice thing to, you know, on the mornings. I mean, we're playing golf. We're in the water. But we've kind of made a little thing like, hey, man, let's take 30 minutes in the morning. We get together. We get to have a coffee. I can do a couple of walking lunges, and it's like us going for a practice. Kind of, you get to see the guys, and not that you don't see them enough, but it's just a healthy, because there's other ways the guys like to have fun too. So I don't know, maybe it's just a little bit more balance for all of us.
Yeah, I agree. And swimming for me mentally and physically, but I play pickleball with the boys on Mondays, go see them, get a little workout. And, you know, I get what you're saying, but for me, the swimming aspect, as good as it's been for my back and hips and my joints, Shelly, is mentally. I come out of the tank, and I don't know, man. I'm just like, I'm ready to go for the day kind of thing.
Buddy, so a few years ago, I got in really good shape, like probably my second year of sobriety. And we did swimming, and I did it with my trainer, and he was a big dude. And I'm like, how hard could it be to swim? Buddy, one lap there and back, like I thought I was drowning. I had to stand up, right? I'm like, fuck. This guy, he's 262, and he's just fucking ripping back and forth. I'm sinking. I can't, like, my legs are kind of dropping because they're not strong. And I'm like, this is the hardest thing I've ever. And then I couldn't stop sweating, bro.
Yeah, oh, your internal, it gets you so hot inside. Yeah.
But the pounds were falling off. But, oh, my goodness, I felt like such a bump.
First time I did it at Big Canyon, there's as a shallow end and a deep end. And I'm like you, I get in there, and there's no lifeguard on duty. I'm thinking, like, if I go down, I look around, there's like a 65-year-old woman over here. I'm like, I'm fucking done. If I go in the deep end, and I'm like you, I can't keep my hips up. I'm just like, And I just stayed with it, Shelly, and I'm glad I did because it has changed my life. But I'm with you. It was a pretty.
If you see him in there too, that's when funny. He first started, there's a lot of water moving around.
I'm
that
moving
pool.
Water around.
He does one breaststroke like that, and the waves are just fucking going down. I'm like,
can you imagine if you're swimming and the lifeguard jumps in to try to save you? You're like, no, I'm just swimming. Like,
yeah, I'm actually all good here, buddy. I'm just on my second lap. Shelly, I just want to ask you, buddy, and yeah, we're so happy for the way you're living life now, but you were a legend in our glory days, and I wanted to ask you, like, LA, Newport Beach was so great to me at Upbeat Loops, because we kind of came out here, we worked out, we played golf, we did our thing, and looking back in our era, you were kind of one of the first guys that I knew of that was living out in LA and training there. What was it to LA back in the day, besides, you know, the fun stuff that brought you out here?
Well, I think it was 1999. I went in the summer and I did the NHL at that time was like, no one wanted to really do anything on the side. Like, not, I don't want to say modeling or TV stuff, but like, we weren't really getting that many opportunities. So when I was coming up in Jersey and I was a young guy, I got some of these opportunities. So in June, I remember, I was in Edmonton after the season had started, and dude, I'm wearing a sweater and it's, you know, and I don't even think it's cold. It's just Edmonton. Right. And they go, well, you got to go to LA to film this TV show. You got a spot on this TV show. I said, perfect. So I go there. And at that time, I had met a couple people in New York that were actors or whatever. Right. So I go there, I get off the plane, everyone's good looking, the weather is amazing, you know, I go and do this TV thing, I meet more people, and I'm like, it's like this, like, wow, it's nice today, like every day. And I go, well, you know what, I'm making $1 million, I'm spending one too, when I have enough money to move out here, I'm coming. So in 2000, you know, I moved out there, and I'm like, I'm not going to go to Edmonton anymore. My shift at Ezzy's was done. Yeah. You know, that was a good show. A good
Tuesdays at Ezzy's,
Hey, 14 years. So I said, yeah, I'm going to go to L.A. And, you know, I met my ex-wife there, and, man, I was training. There's a group of guys that you know in L.A., the actors that like to skate on Sunday nights or Mondays, and I don't know. I couldn't believe it. It was everything I thought. Like they showed in the movies, and Uppy knows, and you know, like where we're from, you don't have a chance to live in LA.
No.
And so I thought it was just going to be a summer or two and, you know, stay in shape and whatever. And it just, I mean, there's something about it, right? Being from Alberta and then going to LA is like, okay, not a big decision here.
Yeah. How did Lou Lamoriello take you? How did Lou take you moving there if they're going on a TV show?
Lou didn't love it, eh?
Is that probably why you got shipped off to Montreal shortly thereafter?
Bro. When I got traded, Rajon Hull gets on the phone and it's at night. And we're in Colorado. We're playing Jersey. We're in Colorado. And he calls where I get traded like 9 at night. And Rajon Hull gets on. Well, you know, Lou calls me. And he says, hey, we traded you. I said, okay, yeah, whatever. And Rajon Hull gets on the thing. And he said, hey, you know, good to have you. He said, we're going to get you on a red eye into Boston tonight. And I said, okay. He goes, you're going to play tomorrow in Boston. I said, great. Said, we heard you don't sleep much anyway. I said, I found my place, and said, finally they get me.
Yeah.
Someone who respects what I do.
Yeah.
But man, Lou was, he actually called me one summer. It was like in June. And he says, hey, well, his assistant called me and said, hey, we're going to have a little week down in Florida. Bring your golf clubs. You guys are going to do a little bit of training, but Lou wants you to go. I'm like, finally getting the respect I deserve after 2 years, he finally gets me. Well, I show up and I'm waiting for dinner, and there's a few of us, there's three or four of us, like Peter Sikora, Patty Elias, Ken Danico. And so I'm waiting for dinner, and they put this little plate, it's about that big, in front of me with a little piece of like couscous and one like scallop. And I start laughing. I'm like, what the fuck, man? And Lou comes in and he's like, boys, you're here for a week. You're doing mental toughness training. It was like Navy SEAL training. We didn't touch the golf clubs. It was just the golf club stayed in the van for a week, and we're running in the mornings. And it's like 100 degrees and full humidity. Buddy, I left there And then the last day we're there, our owner lived in this place, Lake Nona. Maybe you guys know it, like the golf club.
Yeah.
And so David Ledbetter was there. So we did this thing and we trained and whatever. And so the last day, like we had eaten like hostages for a week. I mean, like nothing. Okay. And so they said, okay, you guys are going home tomorrow. Tonight we're going to have a barbecue at the team owner, Dr. McMullen at the time. He had these two labs, big yellow labs. Okay, so we go over there, and there's this huge tray of steaks, okay? We're just the smell of the barbecue, like, I'm like, I'm going to eat both seven. Well, we get rationed the food, okay? So they cut the steak up for us. You get, like, a half a steak and whatever the sides are. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, I'm looking at the steaks, like, when can I do it my way? And Dr. McMullen is taking the steak off the tray and he's feeding it to his labs. I would have ate the lab. I was like, this is unbelievable. He's feeding the steak to the dog and we're sitting there looking at each other like, I don't think he likes us. Man.
That is mental toughness.
That is old school mentality.
That's there, like fighting.
Starve the boys. Bring
that's
the
fighting words.
Oh,
it was... Man, it was crazy. I remember Lou whipped his shirt, so we had this like 6 a.m. run, so we're getting up at like 5:30, and it was really hot and humid this morning, and you guys know Lou, and so we get up, and our jog was like a couple miles, right? I couldn't go friggin' 200 meters jog. I had to walk. Okay, now I'm out of shape. So Lou comes up, and he's talking to me. The sun just came up, and he whips his shirt off, and he's like, I'm in as good shape as you. He's, you know, this little guy whips his shirt off. He's 65 years old. He's, I'm in better shape than you. I'm like, he kind of was, though. I'm like, yeah, you're not bad, bud. Like,
good angle, Lou. You look pretty good there, bud.
Hang on, like, wow, you're not already in shape.
Scotty Gomez couldn't have been doing too much running at 5:30 in the morning, was he? No chance.
Scotty, we also had, for the summers, that summer I moved to L.A., we had Pavel Bure's dad came and trained us. So he trained us for, like, a month, right? And so we had to do this running and we had to do these agility drills. And I remember being with Gomer. He just won Rookie of the Year. So he was good, right? He was like, I'll never work out again in my life. Like, I'm set. And Pavel Bure's dad, man, like, he thought we were Pavel Bure and we were not. That's not the way we played. But he had us doing some things and I wanted to quit hockey. I just signed a contract. I'm like, I don't know if I can do this, Pat. This is hard.
I hear you. I hear some of the stuff they made us do back in the day. I don't know if it helped our career for sure.
No.
Some of the workouts. And
I have nightmares of that. That Wingate, I still have nightmares of that stupid Cybex bike, that white one with the fucking weights on it. I look at that thing.
Oh.
With the VO2, like the 10-minute VO2 where they just keep piling it on.
Hard. I'm like, what is this doing here?
Yeah.
This is not
good. My draft year, I was out of shape. I'll tell you guys, my draft year, I was really out of shape because I broke my leg fighting Brent Myers, right? And so I only played like 40 games my draft year. I was, you know, rated kind of high and then started falling. And so you remember they do those draft combines where they bring in all like the top prospects, right? And so I broke my leg in January. Now this is like in May. Now I haven't done anything, so they're like, well, we're gonna get you out to this draft combine. I think it was in, like, Brainerd, Minnesota or something. You remember that?
Yeah.
And so, okay, I did the Wingate, do the VO2. Obviously, if there's 50 guys there, I'm like number 50. You, like, Lou's 49 height, I'm 50. And we had the bench press. Remember, it was 135 pounds and you had to do as many reps to the beeps, like, boop, boop. So okay, you're up. So I get it, and I push it off the thing. Okay, go. One. They go, well, you weren't ready. We'll try again. I go, no, just put me down for one. I'm good.
Buddy, first time I came to I wasn't even good. I wasn't even a prospect to go to the combine, but I think it was Jersey or so. I went to a workout, and they're like, pull-ups. I'm like, pull, fuck. And I get, fuck. They're like, you want to go again? I said, no, I don't want to go again.
And if you give me one, that's one more that I was going to get anyway. So
I'm like, where? Yeah, can
we just, told my agent, save your money on the ticket for us to go to the draft. It didn't go that great, bud.
we'll watch it from home, man. We'll watch it from home.
Oh,
Shelly, I got to ask you, first time I ever played against you in Montreal, I was my second year in the league. I was in Tampa. you guys beat us, and I was waiting out the room, and you came walking down to the Habs room, and you had this fucking fur jacket on, and you had the hair going, and I'm like, first of all, where is he going? And second of all, fuck, do I wish I could go with him. But how was Montreal, man? Not too late, but it must have been, because you played hard and you were stud, and then, I mean, that was my favorite road city. Buonanotte, buddy, I mean, I love it there.
And you had Theo in his prime there too, eh? You two just savages.
Buddy, well, it's a good thing that he was French and I was English, because then there was enough room for all of us, right? If I would have been French, he would have hated me. And if he was English, I would have hated him. Man, it was awesome. You know, coming from a place like Jersey, where things were really structured and they are maybe the best organization in the league, or they for sure were at that time. But you know, so you fly private and you stay at all the nicest. So they were doing that before the PA made all these changes. And so really great organization, but really felt like I was being babysat all the time, you know? So I go to Montreal, you know, growing up where we grew up, you were either an Oilers fan or a Flames fan. You weren't really like a Montreal fan. You weren't a Toronto fan. You kind of hated those teams. At least it was, that's how it was in my house. So when I got traded to Montreal, I'm like, fuck, you know, when I told you I got traded and I was flying that night from Boston, all I could think about was like, how am I going to look in a blue helmet? Like, I like black helmet, you know? So I'm like, I got to wear a blue helmet. And I got there, man, and we had great guys. We sucked, but we had like Weinrich and, you know, Scott LaChance and Linden and Corson. So it was fun as soon as I got there. And it was a real wake-up call because I got traded kind of at the deadline that year. And so I only played, I think, maybe 15 or 19 games. But it was like a wake-up call, like, whoa, dude, this is like the NHL. Like, this to me was like, oh, this is a different thing because of the crowd and how many people were wearing, like, Montreal Canadiens things to the games and the way they were producing it. Immediately, I just felt like, and like I said, the management was different. I felt like I could just kind of be myself a little more. And I wasn't looking at like I'd be there forever, right? I thought they'd get tired of me, and I'm not a French guy. So yeah, they'd probably just trade me anyway. So I was just, it was such short term stuff that ended up, I loved it. If you can play there, you can play anywhere.
Yeah,
you know, right? it's going to show you right away.
Fellas, Labatt Blue USA. Lots of things are better together. Hockey and Labatt Blue. Golf and Labatt Blue. Barbecuing with an ice-cold Labatt Blue. But if you really want to take things to the next level, drink some Labatt Blue Lights with your friends and live life to the power of we. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York.
Wait.
Same as Vancouver, man. And I love my 2 years in Van. I wish I could have stayed longer. There was reasons why I couldn't, but I mean, if you can play in the Canadian market, especially Montreal, then you can handle anything. And how did you like the media there and dealing with that? And did you kind of intimidate them and they left you alone, or how was the media when you played there?
The media was okay. I think, you know, when I got there, I was having, up to that point, my career was much different than it ended up being. So I think there was a little expectation out of me. You know, and so they weren't, like, the first year or two, they weren't really, you know, I got hurt right away. So I don't think there was a whole lot of expectation on me. So I was just kind of like, when I would do media, I didn't hate it. I kind of embraced it. Like I said, you know, I was just kind of wanted to be a good guy, because I seen that if you don't get along with the media there, they can make life tough on you, right? And so I'm like, well, I don't need any more stress in my life, so I'll be good with these guys. I'm an English guy. I only have to deal with one kind of reporter. It wasn't like I didn't have to do interviews in French and English. So right away, I was like pretty comfortable with it. And I kind of grew up as a professional in that city. And I kind of grew up with those people, if that makes sense. You know, like,
yeah,
I wasn't José Theodore. He had a lot of expectation on him.
Yeah.
And I didn't, so it was different for me.
Shelly, so what do you remember back? So in 2004, we get locked out. What the fuck did you do? Because you came back in you came back in 05, 06 as a different guy. I mean, you had 39 points. Then you come back at 26 goals, 64 points. Theodore, I remember Theo was a guy, I think he was fresh off his Hart Trophy, signs a new deal. When we come back to play, he gets rolled back 24%. He's like,
oh, the rollback.
He got rolled back. I'm like, so what, like, bring me back there. What was it like when you came back after that full lockout? Because you upped your game, and what was that? Do you remember anything from then?
Yeah, well, that happened to me too. So that season before the lockout, I had a pretty good year. It changed a little bit. I might have had 9 goals. I don't even know what my stats were, but I had my career high was probably 3, and I might have had like 7 or
yeah, you got 15. You got 15 in 03-04, yeah. 35 points, 15 snipes, though. That's a big
104 pims, more importantly. 104 pims, that a baby.
Yeah, a lot of 10s. End of the game. So after that season, I signed a 4-year deal. I signed a 4-year deal, and I'm like,
yeah, I know shit.
If I could retire after this, yeah. I just made $10 million, man. Like, this is amazing. Okay, lockout, we missed the season. There goes 2.5. Roll back 25%. There goes that. And so I had a contract for 3 more years with that rollback, and then you guys know we're paying into escrow, and this $10 million contract turns out to be about $1 million or $2 million.
It's nuts. It's nuts.
It was crazy, but I don't know. I felt like I'd had a little taste of success, and I like that feeling. I like people, you know, I like going to Buonanotte at night and people knowing who you are, right? Yeah. Instead of waiting in line with the fur coat on. I like when you wear the fur coat and you go right in. And so things just started clicking. I also got hurt. I broke my hand, and I remember they said, well, you might not play again. I just had a baby. You know, I was married at the time, I was living in LA. I'm like, no, I'm gonna play again. Like, you know. And so I kind of got it in my mind that when you get another opportunity, it has to be different than it was. Cause what I was doing wasn't really working. And you know what? I will say this about Lou Lamoriello. When he traded me, he said, this is gonna be good for you. Like, you have more to give. Maybe we aren't getting it out of you. And I didn't like the coach in Jersey at the time, Robbie Fatorik. He didn't like me. And he said, you have so much more to give. And it was kind of a parting kick in the balls, but also kind of, at the time, that's what I took it as. Looking back, that was like a, hey, man, you got more to give, and you're going to get the opportunity, so go and do it. And so just went to Sweden for that lockout. And when I came back, you get a deep sense of gratitude and appreciation for playing in the NHL when you got to go play in Sweden in a small town for 4 months or 5 months. So getting back that year, I was pretty happy to be back in and games being played.
Yeah. So I loved your game as a defenseman. I always thought we'd be a nice D pair. You'd have to play the right side, but I could slide over for your one-timer. And your one-timer, I remember one night in Dallas, I'm like, Shelly, fella, keep her down just a bit. Just keep her down just a bit. But I want to talk to you about fighting, because there was nobody tougher. You were a lefty. I used to tell Kessler and Burroughs, if you fucking get Shelly going, I'll fight you in practice tomorrow. But you used fighting as kind of, what did you think of fighting? Because you were a good enough player that you didn't have to fight, but you had it there. How did you kind of use fighting as a tool, I guess?
Well, Obes, I know you know this feeling, right? I know you know it, that fighting is the most stressful job in hockey.
Yeah.
I just don't care what you say. If you got to go for a day or 2 days or 3 days, knowing you got to fight Brash or Tony Twist, or, you know, the list goes on, right? Chris Simon, Brad Myers, whoever.
Yeah.
I didn't like that feeling. Like, in juniors, I was tough, and I liked sticking up for my teammates. But when I got to the NHL, I'm like, I got no chance. Like, Matt Johnson.
Oh, they're monsters. They're monsters.
Paul Lowe. That's like the middleweight guys.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Those Pete.
Like, I wasn't going to go fight like Bob Probert, but the next guy in line is, you know, whoever, Ryan Vandenbosch.
Yeah.
I didn't like that. Right?
Yeah. Guy's a killer.
And so when I got the opportunity to kind of play a little more and play the power play, and we had a lot of injuries, it wasn't like I was the shining star that they said, okay, now's your opportunity. It was like, okay, well, fuck, we got 8 guys on D hurt. I guess, you know, I guess this guy's going. It's either this guy or the assistant trainer. So I got out there. And things just started kind of clicking. And then, you know, it felt good to have coaches say, we need you on the ice. We don't want you to fight, because you guys know, like, that's a man's world, man. And I didn't love living in it. Like, if I had to stay there, I would have been out of the league in a year or two, because I'm just not that level of tough.
Yeah, and listen, you are that level of tough, but I know what you're saying, because I did it throughout the American League to stick around and improve my skills, and then I did it to make the NHL. And then I got traded to Tampa, and they went there and they said, let's just play, Obes. We traded a first round to just play, and then everything was great. And then I got traded to Vancouver, and Shelley, I was right back to like, okay, you got to be physical, you got to be fighting.
Yeah.
Mike Gils is like, yeah, I've been in a fight in, you know, 10 games. I'm like, I'm fourth in the league in fights. The fuck else do you want from me? And I was like, I got to go back here again and do this all. It's really grinding on you.
Yeah.
It's hard. Like mentally, it was tough. And so having an opportunity to play a different way and, you know, it's just sometimes, you guys know, it's just luck sometimes. You get put on and, you know, I'm playing on a power play with Andre Markov and Alex Kovalev, like, you could have put anybody out there and they would have scored 10 goals. You know, it just happened that we started going and you know, started having a little bit of success. And I like that more than I just didn't like I just wasn't that kind of guy. Now I could play. The other thing is I knew that playing like that, like, you know, I played with Scotty Stevens and Chelly was my idol growing up. And I seen some guys, Lyle Oderline is a good example too. You know, being tough gets you a little, like, I could cross check as good as anybody. So, and then I would just say, you know what? I don't care if I get a suspension, I'll club you over the head. And then, so guys kind of don't know what's going to happen. So it was just kind of like, that was just my game was able to evolve and give me a little room to, you know, to guys weren't coming in to run me now in the corner.
Exactly.
And so I had a little time I had an extra second or two to go off the glass and out.
Yeah. You know? No, but Shelley, Shelley, you're so right. And it was also a thing, if I looked at a guy and I kind of knew, okay, I got you, fella, you're not really going to do anything to me. And also I wanted that extra second, like, I don't want this guy to run me in the corner because I need that extra second to go D to D or to make that play. So exactly. I'm with you. That's why I did it as well, to give me a little more time to make a play.
There were certain guys that went on to earn that right. You know, it's like the Prongers or Chara or Weber, like where they like, you know what? Fuck you. You come around me. I don't need to fight you. But if you come around me, I'm going to fucking either kick your ass or spear you in the face. Yeah. And that is a dynamic. Yeah. You know, you didn't ever want to fuck with those guys.
Yeah, I mean, they put Pronger in jail for his cross checks in front of that nowadays. No, like, Prongers used to just kill guys.
Bro, we used to, when I was in Jersey, I mean, we had Scott Stevens, Lyle Oderline, Ken Danico. I mean, you used to cross check a guy in front of the net. His helmet used to come off. You'd go to the bench. The coaches would be like, that was such a good play. Yeah. I got a couple more of those tonight. It was like getting a hat trick when you come off after cross-checking someone. And then the game just changed, right? And I also think, if I'm being honest, just thinking about it right now, I think as the rules changed a little bit and fighting started to become like maybe the stage fighting a little less, it also gave me an opportunity to be like, well, okay, maybe Francis Lessard isn't going to come after me tonight. Like, he's not even going to play. So the game was kind of evolving, and you just got to kind of evolve with it, I guess.
Yeah, and that's a great point by you. And in our era especially, it got to, and I love Brian McGrath, and I told Bigger when we were back down in the jungle riding the Iron Lung, I'm like, you guys got so big and so tough that you guys kind of became just like stage fighting kind of. So I didn't have to worry about fighting them because I was getting a regular shift, where when you came up, Proby and those boys, they were part of the game. Like, it wasn't like kind of through my era, you know?
Yeah, totally. And McGrattan was playing in Ottawa when I was in Montreal, and he used to skate across the red line and go, I'm coming after you tonight. And I said, yeah, well, you're going to get one of fucking these. So I'm ready for you.
Yeah.
And just that, I'm like, oh my God, don't come after me tonight. Are you going to embarrass me? It's Saturday night. We got the day off tomorrow. But you never know, right? Like, just someone saying that, like Prongs, you weren't afraid he was going to fight you necessarily. But you weren't like in a real hurry to get in the corner or go to the front of the net. And that's the difference in the NA, you know, it's a second year or second there.
Yeah.
It, it just makes all the difference in the world.
I love that was your mindset. That was Saturday night, we had a day off, because I used to be that in Vancouver. I'm like, fuck, we got tomorrow. Sure. Like, just nobody hit me in the face.
Yeah, anything but the beak.
Fuck, I got a night lined up here. Just don't fucking hit me with a stick or something.
Exactly.
Right?
And don't lose 7-1.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't
want to
practice tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shelly, you'll love this. I'm chasing this bastard down in Nashville on a Friday night, Saturday night game with the night off after. And I'm staying over, and I'm chasing him behind the net. And sure as shit, I go to lift up his stick, and I get him right between the eyes
right
for here. for ten zips.
Right? I'm like, I look up, I'm bleeding.
He's down to the corner.
I'm like, that
the ref's fucking sending me to the box. I'm laughing. He's bastard.
I'm like, hey, after the game, I'm like, fuck, keep your stick down. By the way, meet me at my pad. I got a few things lined up for you. Let's go.
On the ice, you're like, I'm gonna get you. I'm gonna get you after the game. You're like, oh, dude, good game.
Shelly, I could do this all day with you, buddy, but the last thing I got to say is I was lucky enough to go to the Playboy Mansion 3 times, but my man, you were the first guy that took me there. You took me there under your wing, so I've always had gratitude for you in that way, my man. You got me to the mansion, you opened up the light for me, and I was lucky enough to go there a few more times, but thank you for that.
The light's still shining. If
I just remember me and Loops, we were last guys standing there. We're like, I think party's over before I got to leave.
Yeah, I got to leave, but where's Obes? And there's Hef with about 15, and there was OB with about 15 a moment. I said,
I guess he's staying.
He's in good hands.
Yeah. Shelly, in all seriousness, buddy, we're so happy for you, buddy. Me and the Updog love you. Keep it going. Let's try to tee it up sometime soon, and thank you for taking the time, brother.
Bro, thank you guys, man. Keep kicking ass. We need more guys like you, and I don't take it lightly. You know, we talked about some heavy things. Thank you guys for giving me that space, and thank you for you guys supporting me through my life, you know, just ups and downs, and none of us are perfect, but you guys let me know it was okay to not be perfect. So tremendous honor and respect for you guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks, fella.
Love you, buddy.
Fella, we got to talk about Jägermeister. No chirping, no running its mouth. Let's just talk about the confidence on these guys.
Our friends at Jägermeister sent us this ad read to read on the show, fella. But they're confident that they said, don't do any of that normal ad stuff. Tell the listeners two things. Jägermeister's great, and everyone's been drinking it wrong. Well, if that's the case, how the hell do you think we should be drinking it?
Updog, that's a great question. Ice cold, fella. At 0 degrees Fahrenheit, to be exact. Ice cold shots of Jägermeister. That's it, my man. That's all they want to tell you. Damn, that's cold.
Just remember to check out Jägermeister at www.draftkingsxjagermeister.com. Drink responsibly. Jägermeister Liqueur, 35% alcohol by volume, imported by Mast Jägermeister US, White Plains, New York.